To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
All right, and again, we are live. A little different today. Ella has late meetings and is finishing up softball. So tonight it's just our cephalopod friend, Justin.
Hello, everybody.
Your local pyromaniac and metal fan, Brian. And what we're sipping on today is it's a little different. There's not anything more I can tell you about this because today we have Buffalo Trace.
Nice.
The Buffalo Trace. I finally found a bottle of this in stock. I think Kroger had it. Yeah. And what inspired me to do this one today is because you'll hear me talk about this whiskey all the time in reference to other whiskeys. And I was thinking, I don't taste these whiskeys and come off with like, oh, there's all this different subtleties, there's these flavors and stuff. Like, the Buffalo Trace has a strong finish of honey and vanilla. I can tell you that. But I've drank enough whiskeys that I have what I consider reference grade whiskeys.
Yeah.
And these are the bars with that I set for other whiskeys. And Buffalo Trace is one of those. This was one of the whiskeys I had early on when I was young, in my 20s. And I just was like, well, that's something special. I was still mixing with Coke back then.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this, even you purists, Buffalo Trace with a little prescription strength Coca-Cola is still delicious to this day.
Yeah.
My other reference grade whiskey, which I still think is the king of whiskeys, is Jack Daniel's. And I was thinking about what I would call a reference grade for a rye whiskey. And this is a weird one. I don't even know if it's around anymore. It was from the show Moonshiners. It was Jim Tom's Rye Raw Whiskey.
Really?
Unaged, straight rye mash. And that just, you took away all of the finishing, all of everything, and you could taste what rye whiskey was in that.
Yeah.
I really like that. It was very nice. It was surprisingly nice. So I think rye is a really good base.
Yeah.
I've had that. I like it quite a bit. Jack Daniel's rye is good. It's not a lot different than your basic Jack Daniel's. It's got a little more of a spice to the finish.
Yeah.
So we've had so many ryes here lately, though. That Rittenhouse was really good. There's a lot of complexity to that.
Yeah, the Rittenhouse was
but
good.
But let's give this a drink. I mean, this is nothing new to us, but let's just see how this feels.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The vanilla is so strong in this Buffalo Trace. Just a little on the rocks. It's not aged at all. It hasn't had any time to build water up.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. It almost completely covers any burn that you have at the end. But
it really does.
Vanilla and honey.
It is a popular bourbon. Many people view it as the standard. I spent almost a decade in Louisville, and I can tell you I know many, many bourbon heads that that's their go-to.
Their go-to. It's
that Maker's Mark.
This is the goddess Catalina's birthday whiskey.
That's awesome.
Very good. Yeah, the other one that, oddly enough, we're drinking it out of the glasses, that is a reference grade whiskey, and I've said it before, it's supposedly one of the best-selling whiskeys in the world, is Jim Beam.
Yeah.
Jim Beam is just kind of a pungent, alcoholic tasting, like, it's like, this is bourbon, punch you in the face.
Yeah,
like,
it's a gut punch.
It has no subtlety. It's the Kid Rock of whiskeys.
It's fully molded.
America, fuck yeah.
Fully molded, wrapped in an American flag. Fuck you, this is whiskey.
This is it, Kentucky. And then you get into the Jim Beam Blacks, it's aged a lot more, so it's mellowed a lot more. It's a good whiskey. I actually had a friend of mine say, why am I spending $50 a bottle on Maker's Mark after he tried Jim Beam Black for the first time in a while? I was like, it's a fantastic whiskey. Now, with the cheaper whiskeys, you do get a little inconsistency. Every now and then you'll get a bottle, you're just like, what did they do to this one?
Yeah.
That's just part of it.
Not quite what it should be.
Not quite, yeah. So, we talked a bit, and I just realized that one of the stories I'm going to tell tonight, Justin has never, ever heard. And we did not plan this episode very well. We just kind of bounced some ideas back and forth, and we were like, hey, let's do this. Let's kind of go off the cuff. So this will technically be a deep dive into scary stories, stuff that's happened to us, stuff that, you know, we've gone through. you've heard my stories about sleep paralysis and waking up, and there was certainly, in my mind, a man standing in my room who later dropped a spider on my roommate.
Yeah.
So that was that fits in a scary story, but to me, I can kind of wrap my mind around that and say, well, this is people experience this. This is not an uncommon thing. It is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, these are a little different. So Justin, where'd you want to go with this one?
Well, I've just had I've never actually seen a ghost. I'm a person that wants to believe. I truly do, but you got to prove it to me.
Yeah.
But I've just known so many people that have seen ghosts or had paranormal things happen in their life. And I actually ghost hunted for a summer. I went to Waverly. I did that. I went to several places that reported to be haunted. And I never saw anything. And the way it's been explained to me by the witchy women in my life, that I'm just not sensitive to it.
Yeah.
That you have to have a certain sensitivity to it. And I apparently just don't have it. The UFOs love me.
That's your ghost.
But I've always found it fascinating that from beyond the grave, that the spirits, the unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've grown up since early childhood, as far back as I can remember. My mother was raised in a house that's been reportedly haunted by at least 20 people. Have all said it's haunted. Each person that lived there said they had their own personal haunting. And I've just heard fantastic ghost stories throughout my life. So most of these that I'm going to talk about today is stuff that's happened to other people.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to hear this story I haven't heard from you.
So yes, and it is not a ghost story, but I will throw this out real quick. Where we're at right now, my neighbors are the Reddicks. Yeah. And they've lived here for a long time. Now, Butlerville is very, very old. You can still see the Masonic building where they have the mail hooks on the top.
Yeah.
This is a rail station town when there was nothing else. Our home is on basically two foundations. We found this out when we were doing the plumbing and underneath it. Well, my neighbor told me that this used to be a two-story house and that it was extremely haunted.
Really?
And she has stories from when she was a kid, and her parents had stories about this place. They tore that house down, leveled it, and then built this one.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, we had a roommate that I swear was... something followed him around. It had to be, because that was the only time weird stuff ever happened was when he was here.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's a nice, normal home.
Yeah.
We sleep through the night. And no, the dogs do every now and then stare off in the distance, but they're a little crazy.
I think dogs plan that.
I think they do.
I think they get together and they say, really freak out the humans, stare off into space, and just suddenly tilt your head to the side.
Act as if something confuses you. So, now this story that happened here, this is totally different. Now, I've got a precursory story to this. I was a kid. I mean, I was maybe 10 years old, and we had a shed that was like my little... I had all my stuff back there, and it was just a little wooden shed. But on the back of it was a lean-to. I remember finding giant morel mushrooms back there.
Yeah.
They were growing out of old, like, roof insulation or something that they'd pulled out, like sheeting insulation.
Really?
Yeah, very strange. And, I was in that shed one night, and I lived in the woods. I mean, we heard animals all the time. But I swear I heard footsteps, solid, loud footsteps walking there, and I just panicked. I remember bolting out of there and running inside and just being terrified. Went back out with a flashlight, nothing. Nothing was there. So that's when I was a kid. I figured I freaked myself out. A deer walked up in there. Who knows, a raccoon. You can rationalize that.
Yeah.
Now, this one's a little different. I had a corgi named Tootsie. And she was a very awesome, super smart dog. Corgis are the smartest dogs in the world.
Yeah.
But they're also assholes, and they don't like humans.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. They're like the cat of dogs. They're like, no, you don't tell me what to do. I do what I want to do.
Yeah.
So Toots and I got in this big routine where we would walk every night. Now, if you have ever looked at like an aerial map of where we're at, we're a highway cut in state forests. We're surrounded by them.
Yeah.
And it goes this way all the way until it turns to hills and mountains down by Kentucky and Ohio on the border there.
Yeah.
So I would take Toots for walks out here. And when you're walking out here at night, I mean, it's pretty surreal. Like, you can see a long distance. Well, it was a full moon. I remember this. So I remember walking up. And I remember seeing coyotes off in the field to my left. It's not uncommon around here.
Yeah.
They generally won't mess with anybody.
Yeah.
So I went down to the reservoir. Now, the reservoir here is you walk down a hill, a long curvy hill, and it's literally a little boat dock. And if you look straight ahead, there is a vastness of forest. I've walked that forest for over an hour.
Yeah.
And got scared of getting lost back in there. And I was like, how far does this go?
I've explored the reservoir.
So
it's no joke.
I looked later, and I was like, this is huge. There are only two access points to this reservoir, and it is surrounded by woods.
Yeah.
So I remember I had a backpack full of books just to add some weight.
Yeah.
And when I was going down to the reservoir, Toots dead stopped to where I actually pulled the collar and was like, what are you doing? And then she moved like three steps and she dead stopped again and like sunk her paws in. And so I'm like, she's doing the corgi thing. She's being a brat.
Yeah.
But it was completely out of nowhere. So I was like, all right, I've been jogging forever. Got this backpack of books on. I need to pee. I'm going to let her relax because she's tired of walking is what I thought.
Yeah.
So I took the backpack off and there's like berms down there where people park. And I sat it on one of them and I walked over by the tree line. And I went to use the bathroom, and I remember sitting there and looking, and I thought, where did all the frogs and crickets go?
Yeah, it's silent.
Dead silent. So, and it was so, I noticed this because I could hear, oh, I'm peeing on the ground, you can hear it.
Yeah.
So this starts to get a little weird. I'm like, I just saw coyotes. There was noise all the way down here. And I hear something kind of snap in the woods to my right, which is kind of like a marsh. It leads into a little river.
Yeah.
And a fucking massive rock. I'm talking a rock the size of my head. Busts through the tree line and slams into the water in front of me.
Really?
I am telling you right now, I have never been, as an adult, that scared in my life.
Yeah, imagine.
I took off up that hill. Toots levitated beside me.
Yeah.
And it was probably in my head, but I swear I thought something was walking the woods beside me as I went up the hill. And I mean, I got up that hill and I was about to die. I left the backpack of books down there. I went back in the daylight and got those. And I was like, at the time, I never thought about this. I was like, what the hell just happened? Because I saw the rock. You would have thought it was a big bullfrog jumping in the water or something. But I watched, you heard it breaking limbs and slam into the water.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, they do army training out there. Maybe the army guys were there and screwing with me.
Yeah.
But I could hear anything that was going on leading to this. And then it was just dead silence. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. Now, looking through this now and watching all these random shows on Discovery and stuff, that's a Bigfoot thing.
Yeah.
That's a primate thing.
Yeah.
And I actually, when I saw that, I was watching these apes through these rocks at a bunch of people. And it freaked me out so bad. I was like, no, I don't, it's like everybody has cell phone cameras now. We'd have pictures of these guys left and right if this was going on. But then I was like, well, would we though? And that really got to me. So I was like, huh.
If a species is half as intelligent as we are, and they view us as a threat, they would do everything in their ability to avoid us. So I think, I think it's kind of a misnomer that we'd have all these pictures of them, especially when you look at, like, all the different creatures that we thought were extinct for 30 years. And then all of a sudden
they're there. The crested gecko and then the Caledonian geckos.
The crested gecko, I'm trying to think. The Tasmanian wolf. There was the iconolith or whatever, the fish. I mean,
yeah, that's the one.
There's literally hundreds that we thought were extinct that have been eventually
gone. I'm going to toast to this because this is my cryptid that I 110% believe is still there. It will show up. The Tasmanian tiger is not extinct.
Yeah. Yeah.
The freaky marsupial tiger thing. There's too many. There are cell phone videos of that.
Yeah. One was just witnessed a few years ago, I believe 2016.
Yeah.
We know that there's a small population out there. That was, strangely enough, I was animal obsessed when I was a kid, and mm-hmm. I was obsessed with odd animals. That was my very favorite animal for about 4 years as a child, was a Tasmanian tiger.
Interesting.
Because it's just baffling. It's not like anything else.
The thylacine, if you want the
thylacine.
The name.
That was my very favorite. I discovered in a book of endangered species. And mm-hmm. even then, that was after they said that it was extinct, this book said it was endangered.
Yeah.
Because no one believed fully that it was gone. And I think it's still out there somewhere. And when you look at the vastness of a place like Australia and the low population, I mean, it's a giant country with 5 million people in it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. When you take that in... when you look at Mumbai, which has 28 million people in it, in a place a hundredth of the size.
Yeah, tiny.
That's no one. 5 million people, one country, one continent. That's insane. And then you look, if with Sasquatch, I've never personally had what I consider a true Sasquatch encounter, but I know several people that have, my mother included. And she actually didn't even believe in Sasquatch fully. Mm-hmm. She wanted to, but she had never had an experience. And her whole thinking was, and this was the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. Her whole thinking was, even at that time, if they existed, we would know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was married to a man out of the Rising Sun area, Aurora area. That's all knobs out there.
Yes.
Right before you get to the Ohio River. And she was actually, they were visiting, my big sister was an infant, they were visiting some of his family who live up in the knobs, and literally this knob had 5 houses on it. They're all part of that family.
Wow.
And it's funny, their last names are the Hills. And they were from a giant hill. They were running late. It was well after dark. She said it was about 9 p.m. They were supposed to be there like 2 hours earlier for dinner, and they'd gotten behind. Something happened with the vehicle or something. My little sister she woke up as they're going up this massive knob and starts screaming. She's an infant. She's only like 6 or 7 months old at this point. And my mom's turned around from the passenger seat trying to console her, and her husband's driving, and all of a sudden... she gets this huge whiff of sulfur. Like, mm-hmm. she thought something was wrong with the car again. She thought that it was overheating or something. Then all of a sudden, she kind of straightens herself back in the seat, and she starts to say, "What's that smell?" And something jumps out the woods. It's tall. It's on 2 feet, and it smashes its fist into the hood of the car, leaving dents in the car. And her husband at the time, my big sister's father, he just laid on the horn and it left. It ran across the road into the other woods. Well, they immediately call the police because they've got a damaged vehicle.
Yeah.
So they called the police, and they were right at this like corner of 4 different counties there and outside of Aurora. And so 4 different county cop patrol cars show up, and a state cop. There was a state post nearby.
For good measure.
Yeah, for good measure. All the cops that showed up claimed this was not their first call in any of their careers. By far not their first call for something very similar. And they all, later that night, like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, showed up at the house they were going to tell them that they had tracked this thing, they had shot it, and lost it. They didn't think they had even injured it all that bad when they shot it. They completely lost it in the woods. And then in the coming months, this is like 1980, my mom starts getting phone calls from different organizations, has no idea how they found her number. She got 2 phone calls. One, she said, was complete wackadoo, didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Claimed that Sasquatch were aliens and like all this crazy
just
stuff.
Just mix them all together.
Yeah, just mix it all
together. That's the government.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
The Illuminati mm-hmm. and like all this crazy shit. But she said the other one, all they wanted to do was ask her a couple of questions, and all the questions they asked actually made sense from what she experienced. They asked, was there a baby crying?
Mm-hmm.
Did she smell sulfur? All these different things that are apparently common amongst Sasquatch sightings. And, mm-hmm. I mean, my little sister, was telling me about in Yellowstone. She looked into volunteering there for a summer, and she talked to several rangers online, and they said, "Well, there's a rule, and when you volunteer, when you find a butchered buffalo, and you will at the end of the season, you'll find at least one, maybe two. You don't report it. You just move as much of it as you can out of view of park visitors and move on. Because it is just known that one to two buffalo get butchered with stone tools every year in Yellowstone. And that would be enough to sustain a large clan. I mean, if they're omnivores like us or like grazers like bear. I mean, you're talking about 1,000 pounds of meat coming off of a buffalo.
Yeah, they're huge.
And there's plenty of caves in Yellowstone that for preservation. There's actually natural salt licks in Yellowstone for preservation. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to preserve that meat through the winter. And, yeah, it's just a known fact that one to two buffalo are going to get butchered with stone tools. And every piece of meat, every piece of leather is going to be taken off of it.
You know, there are people that legit will, the Unabomber was kind of one of these. They'll literally check out a society.
Yeah.
And there are guys that do that primitive camping and live a life that I can't imagine. And they find fulfillment in that. Yeah. There's the show on that, on the Discovery Channel, I think is what it's on. Alone, where they'll put them in the woods and see who can go the furthest, and the guys that do some of that that really make it, you can tell their mind is built differently.
So there
very well could be a group of people that have just checked out and are living out there.
Yeah.
Or it could be that, like you said, there's a small enough population and a small enough density of these that are not around that, you know.
Yeah, and like I said, if they have half our cognitive ability, they would see us as a threat and avoid us at all possible costs. And they'd be smart enough to cover up their tracks and things of that nature. So, I don't know. It's hard telling. Many, many people believe. I went on a big research kick on Sasquatch probably 10 years ago. And Gigantopithecus keeps on coming up.
It does.
They believe that that's what it is. But they've shown, in all the witnessing of Sasquatch I've heard, it shows some level of intelligence.
Yeah.
It definitely does. It seems maybe a little higher on the scale. But then again, we're seeing chimpanzees sharpening sticks and turning them into spears.
And fighting wars.
Yeah, and they're literally domesticating wild dogs and moles. So it's crazy. So,
and orangutans are, I believe, smarter than chimpanzees on an individual intelligence level.
Yeah. And Gigantopithecus is supposed to be just a giant orangutan. It's pretty interesting to think about. But so did you have any other scary stories you wanted to
Well, I do have the one that I touched on a while back, and I'll probably go into a little more detail on this. You've said it yourself, you've been to Waverly.
Yeah.
So when we found out about Waverly, my friend's brother sat and talked to me. They used to sneak in there and drink. And I said, is it haunted? And this is the most straightforward, like, he didn't give a shit. He was in there for girls and booze. And he's like, maybe, man. Like, it was legit. Yeah. Like, if he had any doubt, he'd be like, oh, no, it's a bunch of BS and stuff. And he said maybe. Like, it was a scary place. Like, one of the weirdest places they'd ever go and, like, party in.
Yeah.
Well, this was brand spanking new. When we went there, Ella's sister had just charged up a camcorder. She was all excited to go. And both the batteries were stone dead. We tried them when we got in, and the guy said that happens all the time here.
Really?
It's strange. And this was not ghost story tour guide like they have now. The place is cleaned up and renovated and everything. There were sections we couldn't go in. They were so worn down, holes in the floor and stuff.
Yeah.
These were the owners we're talking to.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff happened while we were there. One of the things that stands out to me is Jennifer Patterson walked down. They said this is a hallway. When you walk down it, you could see shadow people jumping out. And your eyes will play tricks on you, but I swear you could see what looked like someone leaning out and looking. She made it about a quarter way down that hallway and came back absolutely crying and screaming. And she swore that someone stepped right out in front of her.
Really?
And she swore to it, and it scared her to death. And she wanted to leave.
Yeah.
It got her so bad. Heather Downing got her butt pinched and punched Boone. And then the lady that owns it was another... Heather's a redhead. I'm a redhead. This lady's long, flowing red hair. And she started laughing immediately and goes, "You got your butt pinched, didn't you?" And she's like, "Well, yeah." And she's like, "We call that the groper. Yeah. There's a little... We think it's a little boy. He likes red hair." Yeah. I was like, "Bullshit. This is not fucking happening right now." Because I went there just to kind of have fun and hang out.
Yeah.
And by the time we left that place, I was like, "There's something weird here. I don't know if there's something wrong with the magnetic field around this place or what." Now, this is a freaky thing. We went back. Because they were like, I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I'll definitely go back there." The death chute where they took the people down. I walked almost the whole thing. Nothing. Nothing. Yeah, this is no joke. And I might be telling this wrong. The third floor was the only floor where things were weird in that place.
Really?
Weird. The top floor with all the ghost stories about the nurse and five... I don't know. There's all kinds of crap.
Yeah.
All kinds of ghost stories that come up. And none of them panned out to be anything. But when David Day and I snuck off on the third floor, and I swear to you, we saw someone walking back and forth to where we thought it was another tour group coming up. And there was no staircase at the end of the hallway. I'm like, this is... freaking weird. And that's the hallway Heather got pinched.
Yeah.
So at the time I wasn't scared of that. I'm still not that scared of that. But it's strange to me that I went back and when they cleaned the place up, all of it was gone.
Yeah.
It's just like a clean home now. I think there's something to that.
Yeah. My experience was kind of similar in the fact that it was not all cleaned up the first time I went. Second time I went, it was. Second time I went, it felt very touristy.
It feels like a haunted house.
Yeah.
Like an attraction.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was an attraction. It was another roadside attraction. But the first time, neither time did I directly experience anything, but every time I went, someone in the group did.
Yeah.
My fiance at the time, she experienced several things. She experienced a little boy walking up to her and holding his hand out, so she claimed. She wasn't that scared by it. She said he didn't seem malicious or anything like that, but she knew he was not on this realm. She knew.
I wonder if that was on the third floor.
I don't recall. It's been years and years and years ago.
And if I'm telling this right, I mean, like I said, this stuff gets mixed up. Especially when you tell the story a couple times, too, and I've already kind of went into it once, but... it was the third floor or the fourth floor, and one of the floors had this big ghost story and all this stuff. And it was not the floor where stuff happened.
Yeah.
Not at all. And I was like, okay, these like three random events happening in a row here are freaky.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I had a friend that I think for sure was haunted or followed by a demon or something. I don't know.
Weird stuff happened. I'm convinced of that.
So he stole a rock from Waverly.
Okay.
He brought it back with him. Just all the time, random stuff happening here. We'd be sitting on the couch and swear someone walked on the porch. Go look, nobody there. Oh, yeah. So there was a stereo in the bedroom that would turn on randomly. And then for years after he wasn't here, it didn't happen again.
Yeah.
Just very strange stuff. He actually, we came home and he was white as a ghost. And he said that... he asked Ella, he goes, "Were you here earlier?" She's like, "No, I was at work." And he kind of didn't want to talk about it for him. I was like, "What's going on, dude?" And he's like, "I swear to God, I watched Ella walk in the bedroom. I thought she was mad at me because she didn't talk. And he walked in there and looked at her and said, 'Everything okay?' She didn't respond a bit. He walked in his bedroom, came out, and went to talk to her again, and she was gone. And he's like, 'Did I piss her off? She was not here.'"
That's
so, and I don't know, man. The way I heard this explained the best, because I was telling this Waverly story to a guy that's very, very logical. And he's like, "Well, the Earth's magnetic field's probably really messed up there and probably messes with some people." I was like, "Damn, you break that down so simply." Yeah. That could be it.
I think, because we are energetic creatures, we have electromagnetism ourselves.
Yeah.
Our brains create it. That and the flow of our CSF. I think we could leave an imprint, perhaps, if there's so much trauma in an area
or
something of that nature, so much emotion. Because we know that trauma, extreme violence, things like that, will cause our magnetic field, our physical magnetic field in our bodies to expand. Maybe it leaves an imprint in certain places on the Earth's magnetic field. And that's why you see a lot of really common ghost sightings are just a repeating. So I had a friend, I'm not going to give names just to protect everybody in it. I had a friend that all throughout high school, he lived in the basement of his parents' home, and mm-hmm. they did not care what he did down there. It was like his own apartment. And we went absolutely buck wild out for 3 years straight. Well, he got in some pretty heavy drugs. And one night we're all over there. And there's 30 teenagers in his little downstairs apartment. He flips out and is like, "Why won't you help her? Why won't you help her?" And starts screaming and crying and kicks everyone out. He said, "I'm done. No one will even fucking help her." Just goes off. We have no idea what he's talking about. We think he's been up too long or something. We all leave. And then he became a complete recluse. Completely agoraphobic, would not leave the basement at all. His big sister later in life told me that he had told her that he was witnessing a little girl about 5 or 6 years old fall down the stairs every night, and then her dad come down the stairs and finish her off at the bottom of the stairs. And this was happening right in front of everybody who was partying and having a good time, and no one noticed, and no one did anything to stop it. Wow. That's why he flipped out. And he said, "I have to figure out how to help her. I have to. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do." Well, he literally would, if you went over to visit him, he'd shut off all the lights, lock the door. He would not talk to anyone. The only person he talked to was his sister. And his sister, she kind of helped him stay alive. She bought him groceries and stuff and checked on him. Well, one day he came to her and said that he had figured it out. He died of a heart attack 3 days later. He was only like 28 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was chills.
It's probably the most insane ghost story I personally know of. And I mean, it could be explained away with schizophrenia or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Brain plaque.
But the fact that at 28 years old, he tells her that I've figured it out, I can save her. And then he dies 3 days later of a heart attack. I mean, that seems a bit much for a coincidence. And she said his story never changed. Mm-hmm. Never. It was the same thing. Schizophrenics, yeah, they'll have common hallucinations, but they evolve over time.
They're very random.
Yeah, they're very random, and they tend to evolve over time and be different each and every time. Mm-hmm. No, this was the same thing for years. I mean, he was like 21 when he kicked us out. So for 7 years straight, he said the same thing. And completely agoraphobic. He was obsessed. He knew that was what his job was to rescue this little girl from an eternity of just repeating the same fate over and over again. And then he claimed he figured it out, and he dies. It's pretty baffling. So I think there's definitely...
That's a scary one.
I think there's more to meet than meets the eye. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think any of us meat sacks have it quite figured out.
No.
Some are a little more sensitive to whatever other realms exist than others. I know my current girlfriend is. She definitely is.
Yeah.
I call her my witchy woman. She definitely has a sense about her. And
yeah.
She has an understanding, too, that it doesn't frighten her. She doesn't fear death or fear ghosts or anything like that. She told me, she's like, it would have to be pretty extreme. I'd have to feel out of my depth for it to scare me. And she's like, and I haven't met anything that meets that criteria yet. And she's commonly, on a full moon, likes to walk around her farm that's been in her family for 4 or 5 generations,
right,
by herself. So she definitely has a sixth sense. And I think for some reason it may be more a little more common in women to have that sense. I've known more women that tend to have that. Perhaps it's a different level of empathy that gives them the sense. I've known many women in my life that could see ghosts. And my mother, she grew up in a haunted house. This farmhouse was in our family for 200 years. The land is still in our family. My uncle owns the land now. He actually admitted decades later that he had purposely burnt down the original home in the early 90s because it was so haunted. It was becoming unlivable. And there are pictures, Polaroid pictures, from the early 90s when it burnt down. It was an electrical fire, in quotes. the family, he made a big family reunion of it. He had the family help us help him burn off all the rubble, because there's lots of rubble left, because he was planning on replacing it with a pre-built home.
Right.
With a prefab. So he had to burn off all this rubble. Well, there's literal photographs of this huge bonfire. I mean, 30 flames 30 feet in the air, because they're burning off the rubble of this old farmhouse. And there are literally human-shaped flames shooting up out the fire. I mean, there's probably 10 or 15 pictures of plain as day with facial features, flames that just look like a person, like it ascending. It's pretty insane. Everyone that lives there currently or lived there after the fire said that that took care of it.
Right.
But I've also been told that it depends on what part of the property you're on as well, because it seems like there's almost a separate curse on the land. And I think that might go to back to natives, that we know that land. It sets right on the cross, the Muscatatuck from Muscatatuck State Park, and literally the Muscatatuck State Park side is a bluff. That side is flat lowlands.
Mm-hmm.
The farm side, it's a perfect hunting ground.
Yep.
It's literally a huge bend in the river, so they would go up top on the bluff and the women and children would bang sticks together and chase herds of deer and whatever off the cliff, and then you get all the hunters waiting down below, and they just pick off the ones that are only injured, and they eat for months off of that, probably a year, and just a couple of hunts. The University of IU, or Indiana University, used to come down, and every year they would pay my uncle to do digs on the farm, and we literally have an axe head. They said it was Paleo-Indian axe head. We have several items from there. I mean, I have thousands of arrowheads and stuff. And they said you can tell the age by the napping.
Yep.
On the arrowhead. And this is like a Stone Age era arrowhead and axe. It's pretty amazing stuff. We know that land in particular has had people on it and in use as a hunting ground for probably 40,000 years, probably well into the Ice Age. And so there's got to, that's a lot of history to be on one piece of land.
On one spot.
Yeah, one piece of land. And my mom, her haunting, because each child that grew up in that farmhouse had their own personal haunting. My mom's was actually benevolent. She had an old lady that would wake her up gently every morning by playing with her toes. And she'd say, Janet, it's time to get up. And then she would tell her where not to go that day. She always referenced a hymn. For example, she'd say, don't go in the cellar today. He's very angry. He's very angry today. And Mom always listened to it. She never questioned it. She didn't know who he was.
Right.
But she didn't question it. She didn't want to find out. But she never had a negative experience with that, with her particular ghost, because she listened to her. She would tell her, don't go to the river today. He's down there. He's very angry. He's always angry. So I don't know if it was one of my family members in the past, maybe, that have stuck around that's real pissed off about something, or what it was. But every person that grew up in that household had a different haunting, and most of them were not nice.
Right.
Most of them were definitely not. One of my cousins claimed he was chased regularly as a child by, he can only describe it as a pig man. About 3 feet tall, looked like a pig on 2 feet, and had small tusks jutting from his face, and it chased him through the woods regularly. I've actually looked it up, and that one's not as uncommon as you'd think.
Is it like a night terror thing? Like, this is a common thing?
He claimed that it would happen in broad daylight while he was out on the farm playing. As a child, he claimed that he couldn't count how many times that he would be just tromping through the woods, and all of a sudden he'd see it running between trees, and he'd just come running back to the house. And his younger brother, whom I'm much closer to, because the one that was chased by the pigman is much older than me. I think he's 10 years older than I am. His younger brother, who I'm much closer to, who's only like 5 years older than me, told me there was a couple of times he come running into the house crying. And he said, he asked him, was it the pig man? He said, yes. So they went outside. He's like, I ain't scared of no pig man. So they went out to face it. And he said he literally saw tracks.
Wow.
Moving tracks in the mud. So.
Well, I think it's interesting that you've thrown some words out that really mesh. And it's, I can tell you, the stories that scare me the most are the ones that I had through my old career.
Yeah.
And one of the podcasts we're going to do soon will actually be about sociopaths making their way up the ladders to places. But you said the word empathy, and that's a big thing. I try to tell, when I did foster parent training, I tried to explain. I'm like, you're getting these kids, especially the ones that are around teenage age. And I was like, they're going to go one or two ways. They're going to either be full of hatred and probably end up on drugs, or they're going to have a sixth sense.
Yeah.
And it's the trauma. It's how they cope with it. And I would try to talk all my teenage kids, like, dude, do the therapy now. You don't want to be 30 years old and remember all this at once and stuff.
Yeah.
And they that's a genuine thing.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. I could have a bad day that morning, and the minute I would be with some of my kids, Vic, what's wrong? And I have a poker face from hell.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They really do develop this. Hey, my foster parents are mad at me. No, they're not. I just left there. Yeah. And then it almost always it ended up being right.
Yeah.
So there's something to the trauma and the imprint being left.
Yeah.
And also it's like, you know, we're primitive.
Hyper-vigilant. As a survival mechanism.
Yes.
So, and now that I think about it, all the women I know, maybe minus one, have had some sort of severe trauma in their life.
Yeah.
That kind of had that sixth sense. And it's kind of odd to think about, because it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. But yeah, I could totally see where that would be a survival mechanism. You got to know when the mood changes.
Absolutely.
Because that could be the difference of survival.
Yeah, and this is something else I've noticed. If you're a woman in even the modern society we live in that did not experience a significant trauma, most likely around the 12 to 17 year old range, you hit the lottery.
Yeah.
Because we're real good at delving that out.
It's so common. It is so
Peers common. Do it. Parents do it. It's just, especially around here with the culture. It's insane, actually.
It's absolutely insane. I actually joined, it was probably 10 or 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I joined a group called Heat for She. I think I've mentioned it on here before, that's against rape culture. And what made me want to join it was literally at one point, every woman in my life had suffered in some way from rape culture.
Yep.
It was insanity. It is so prevalent around here. It was just so prevalent. I mean, we saw that with the Me Too movement. Just all of a sudden, it was people you would never even thought.
Remember all the crazy conspiracy guys that said they're all perverts? They were all perverts. They're getting arrested for it.
Yeah.
Jesus. But that's the exact same way. I was actually talking to Ella, and I was like, every girl that's in my memory that I'll randomly be like, hey, what are you doing? When I look back, I'm like, they literally came to me and were like, hey, this is happening or this happened. And I'm like, why did you come to me and tell me that? But apparently I was a good bet, because I still think about them. I still care about them.
Yeah.
And I honestly have been putting a ton of thought into this. We need a new bro code. We need the bro code 2.0, because guys need to quit. We need to quit negging one another, because there's a point where you're giving your friend some shit and it's cool, and there's a point to where it actually starts to tear them down.
Yeah.
And I've been saying repeatedly, like, where does this, this is what horrifies me at night, literally loosely, where does this kind of training for these guys to be controlling and crap people come from?
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I was like, it's a demon.
Yeah.
He whispers in their ears at night. But
I think it comes from insecurity. I think
it does.
A lot of men for a long time had a lot of, and this is by no means giving them a pass,
mm-hmm.
but I think they had a lot of pressure put on them at an early age to act a certain way, to not have emotions, to be a tough guy, quote unquote. And it went against so much of their human nature that they had to suppress parts of themselves, and that's how it comes out. And they always felt inadequate. They always felt like they didn't meet that standard. I've never really given a shit because I was raised by a very strong-willed woman that didn't give a shit, and she would not... mansplaining wouldn't fly in her household, you know?
Yeah.
She that wasn't ever going to happen. So I've never really found myself comparing my own self to the traditional male role. And I think as a society, we're breaking that down. We are. Which is a good thing. There's going to be pluses and minuses with it. People fear change.
Mm-hmm.
But humans are an odd lot. We're stuck somewhere between that rising naked ape and that falling angel.
Yeah.
And the more we can communicate, we've talked about generations of communication. So what makes us stand out the most from all of our animal counterparts on this planet is not only our ability to think in very complex and nuanced ways, it's our ability to communicate in very complex and nuanced ways. We can communicate that complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fairly new, honestly, in comparison to our history. And it's completely unique as far as we know on this planet. So we're that creates this duality inside of us, this battling our base nature, but having these higher ideals. And I like to think the more we can communicate that inner life that we live, that inner struggle that we live, that duality, the better we can communicate that in a more nuanced way to everyone, the closer we inch towards that fallen angel. To our higher ideals, so the better angels of our nature.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of leave that those base nature ideals behind. And you see it as our technology has improved. What's the number one thing that's improved? Communication.
That's it.
The first thing that improves. And we talked about this. We're in the age of steam. We're communicating at a level we've... And there are minuses to it. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe everyone deserves a big bullhorn to tell me what they ate for dinner every night.
We're not quite there yet. Yeah.
But it has changed. This is the best time ever to be alive. And
it
people forget that. Just 400 years ago, it was not unusual for someone bigger, faster, and stronger than you to come take your shit.
Marauder culture. It's how it was. Everywhere.
And that's just, you're looking at four... centuries ago.
That's what we get caught in too. It's still a very superficial image-based culture. We're still feeding that. So the same thing that you can reach out to your friend at night and say, I'm having a very rough night.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about these things that happened in my past. You know, can we talk? Yeah. Also, we'll give you the outlet to take a picture of yourself, touch it up, and be like, I'm the toughest motherfucker. we're still doing it. We're still struggling.
It's a constant battle between that our base nature and that higher ideal self. But I think it's getting better. I have a tendency, just like everyone else, to look around and see social media and how it works, and like I have no hope for society. But I try not to look backwards with rosy colored glasses.
Yeah.
Because it's really easy to do. It's really easy to look back at 100 years ago and say, oh, it was so much better. I'm thankful that I was born and raised in an era with indoor plumbing. I'm very thankful.
Just the medical knowledge.
Yeah,
I don't think I would have made it with just that. I almost died when I was 5.
Yeah.
From going in a ball pit because I had allergies.
I had my first surgery the day I was born.
Yeah.
I had three in the first 3 days I was alive. I wouldn't have survived 100 years ago.
Yeah.
400 years ago, I would have been left out on a mountain.
when you think about this is the scary story. This is the scariest of stories.
Yeah.
Is that we're making all this progress. We're getting all these things, all this benefit of these pioneers that have pushed us forward and made these things, and we're still apes.
We're still
clubbing each other.
It's a duality that I think that's kind of the human condition. I think that's it right there.
Yeah.
That duality, the rising naked ape versus the fallen angel. And I feel like every year the fallen angel wins just a little bit.
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah.
I hope it's making ground.
And that's what gives me hope. Because we, on a whole, on a personal level, we are less violent than we were 100 years ago.
Yes.
For a person 100 years ago to just appear now, it would be a completely alien world to them.
Yep.
Just in the fact that they can't just take shit the way they once did. They can't just maraud. And that's improvement. I think I think we have to keep from killing ourselves. That's one of the big pitfalls.
Yeah, we should definitely... One of the things, this is another horror story that floats around in my mind, is that be it the Russians did build things to last a long time, they're still running their nuclear silos off of the equivalent of, like, TI-86 calculators in some spots.
Yeah.
That is concerning. I know we can probably shoot those down. But don't we have an automatic response system to that? I don't want to blow up a bunch of Russian people.
I've read a very interesting book I highly recommend called My Life Undercover by Amaryllis Fox. She spent 5 years in the CIA helping get nuclear arms off the black market. It is terrifying.
The black market.
Yeah. How many nuclear warheads are on the black market?
This is the scary story of our modern day, though.
Yeah.
They're not going to try to buy nuclear weapons anymore. They've lost their scare. Okay.
Yeah.
There
are
people living in Hiroshima, Nagasaki. They're living there now to this day.
Yeah.
Okay. They're going to look for bioweapons now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially with what we've seen currently with the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't take much to scare us back into our holes at this point.
That's what I feel like they're doing.
And we know that our government has weaponized smallpox.
Mm-hmm.
We know that they've got a weaponized influenza. We know this. So you know other countries do, and other countries with far less security do, and far less funds than us to help protect those things. And, so I think you're right. That's the next step. But... so far, so good. I mean, I always like to say I'm trying to live forever. I'm 38 now. So you got to go with what you've seen and not worry too much about the future.
I got to go to Alan Moore. And he talks about, he says, young men's minds. This is a weird dichotomy here. I'm going to go kind of deep.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most controversial people that I really look up to is Esther Vilar.
Yeah.
Now, you have to, when you listen to Esther Vilar, if you're listening to that just outright, you're probably going to get pissed.
Yeah.
When you actually go back and look, that she was almost trying to be comedic about some of her delivery.
Yeah.
She wanted it to be over the top. It makes a lot more sense. And a lot of what she says is solid. But you've got Esther Vilar and Alan Moore. And Esther Vilar says that men are used for utility in society.
Yeah.
And women have become accustomed to using them this way. That's why they're good at manipulation. Alan Moore says that men's minds are kept captivated by things like war and violence instead of things that they should be on, like fucking and enjoying. And it's that, both of those really click with me.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. We're definitely, we're told those are good things early on in life. And that's kind of funny. Look at just like in the 80s, the era we grew up in.
Yes.
The difference between the toys. So I was given Ninja Turtles and Army action figures and X-Men action figures, things for fighting. And girls were given an Easy Bake Oven and a baby doll. So they're given all this responsibility.
Yes.
At a very early age. And we're given violence.
And we wonder why in a divorce the boys become fucks and the girls become ultra successful.
Yeah.
That it just makes sense. You conditioned them right that way. But then they have all this trauma later, like, oh, I have to be responsible for every fucking thing around me.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Enjoy your life.
A lot of them have this complex of they never feel like they're enough or adequate.
Yeah.
And I think men do, too. I think
we do.
We've both been sold this false dichotomy, and we've been sold that, oh, this is what you're supposed to be. This is what you're supposed to be. And we're always going to fall short of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stupid anyway. You don't have to be any way.
But you can filter that picture on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
You can almost be there, bro. You can be that much closer.
Yeah, you can show everyone that you are that thing.
Yeah.
And that's the scary part. But that's, again, part of our base nature. Mm-hmm. I think that goes to a deep-seated reptilian brain.
Mm-hmm.
And our higher ideals, they do tend to shine through. Without them, we wouldn't be talking on a microphone right now, posting on the internet right now, if our higher ideals didn't shine through. And the world has changed real fast just in our lifetime. Think of the next lifetime. Think of the next generation. It's going to continue to change real fast.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful for the future. I always say that I'm a nihilist, optimistic nihilist.
That's a good way to put it.
I believe in nothing, but I believe it'll all work out. I believe we'll be all right. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's a hard thing to kind of wrap your head around. I've been reading a lot about this lately. This programming, societal programming.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to break through, but I see it. I see people breaking through it. And we see it's going to cause chaos. It's going to. That's part. There is no progression without chaos. So we have to break down old structures. We have to break down old boundaries to make new ones, mm-hmm. and to move forward. So for those, we're kind of an odd generation because we're stuck between boomers who were raised on a very black and white world.
Yes.
Very much it's this way and that way. We were kind of the first generation to see the internet and to be connected to the small planet we live on. It was a big world when our parents were children, and now it's just gotten progressively smaller.
Yep.
And it's interesting to watch. I can guarantee that no matter what happens, I'll be somewhere laughing at it. at it all go down.
And when you look at this in the broad scheme, we are all haunted by ghosts of a past, mm-hmm. that has unbelievable power over us.
It does. Even not only our memories, because memories are fallible, but our perception of our own life has a great control over us. We're all mad at our parents for something they did or didn't do,
yeah.
or did too much. Like, it's kind of an odd thing. People have to learn to let their past go and realize that happiness is not a permanent state. Mm-hmm. It's something you're responsible for. You're responsible for your own happiness. You have to work towards that goal daily. And some days you're going to fail. That doesn't mean because you had a bad day that you're not happy. That's something I truly believe. Because mm-hmm. as a person who suffered from severe depression, that didn't want to be on this plane of existence anymore at one point in my life, mm-hmm. I had actually attempted to leave this plane. I can truly say to someone when they say, oh, I'm depressed, I'm like, well, anyone with an IQ above 60 is depressed.
Yes.
Like, that's just fact. In some way, you're depressed. But are you eating right? Are you exercising? Are you treating your body right? Are you surrounding yourself with good people, positive people?
Mm-hmm.
Are you telling yourself positive thoughts? If the answer is no to all that, then maybe you should try the foundational things first and see how you feel. How I came back from wanting to die was I started eating right. I started paying attention to what I was putting into my body. I started exercising. And I hear a lot of people say, well, you're just shaming the victim. I'm not. I'm telling you, there's a way out of this. You got to do foundational things to form happiness. You got to surround yourself with the right people. You got to put good things into your body. You got to treat your body correctly. Our bodies are built to move. So you got to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're still doing all those things and you're still depressed, then maybe we can look at chemical levels in the brain.
Yeah.
But if you're not doing the basics, then I'm going to assume that you're not trying to be happy. Because it is work. It's something you have to do. We're all responsible for it. And it was a big realization for me in my early 20s that no one was coming to save me. No one was going to just come into my life and magically make it all better.
Right.
And I was responsible for all of the happiness or enjoyment I would have in this lifetime. That it rested solely on my shoulders. And that's so freeing. Mm-hmm. You don't realize how freeing that is. It's a crazy thing.
Well, a terrifying concept that you just put out is that you, as a male, as the tough, you know, push forward, earn, you're the mule, yeah. of society,
yeah.
felt that way. Look at the bill of sale we've sold women for so long.
I know.
Eventually, Prince Charming will come with all, yeah. the money and all the things, and then you'll be happy. And that is the other side of Esther Villar's,
yeah.
take on things that nobody really talks about. I'm like, that's not a healthy take either.
Yeah.
Like,
we've all sold this false bill of goods that just doesn't work.
What was it to do? To push procreation? I don't know.
I don't know, most likely. And we've evolved it as a species as well. That might stem from something that we've evolved out of. I mean, we still have appendixes.
Yes, we do.
That's a vestigial organ. Maybe this is just a vestigial part of society that just hasn't fallen off yet. It's getting smaller. You can see it. People are not fitting into their gender roles. The problem we see now is people are still, our base nature is to compare ourselves to other humans. And with Facebook and Instagram and
Oh, yes.
They're comparing themselves to the highlight reel of someone's life.
Yeah.
Not the actual person. The best actual angle, the best shot pictures, the most filtered pictures, the twists they take. Like, it's crazy.
One of my hobbies is photography. I can tell you. I have done some shit, brother. There are some lies I've told on the internet, guys.
Yeah.
You can go look at them.
I don't typically take any pictures of myself. My fascination is pictures of nature. But I found just with angles and different filters and like just upping the depth of this picture or the tint of this picture completely changes the photo.
It does.
And it takes it from, oh, that's kind of cool looking, to, oh my God, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And people are doing that with their faces. And then these teenagers are getting on there, oh, I wish I was as beautiful as her, or if I wish I was as handsome as him, or I wish I took trips all the time like they do, or I wish I was in a loving relationship like they are. But you don't see the downside.
You don't see the flip side.
All put on credit cards and they don't know how they're going to pay for it. You don't see that the boyfriend's abusive at night or talks horribly to them. You don't see that, yeah, they had a giant zit in that picture. And just like you did,
buffered it out.
They just filtered it out. And that's a bad situation. We need to not be comparing ourselves so much. I was very fortunate. I had a disability growing up. I still technically am disabled. I have spina bifida, which if the average person looking at me would have no idea. I've told new doctors this, and they're like, no, you don't. I literally have to show them the scars. Because about 89 to 92%, the numbers are a little hazy there, of the kids was born with spina bifida in 1982, the year I was born, are all in wheelchairs. I was very fortunate. The higher up in the spine, the more it affects. But there's three different kinds. The most severe, all spina bifida means is spina, which is spine, and bifida is a hole. It means a hole in the spine. It's all about how deep does that hole go and how high up on the spine it is. The higher up, the more it's affected. The deeper it goes, the more it's affected. I have the worst kind, so the deepest hole, it's called myelomeningocele, goes all the way to the spinal cord itself.
Yep.
But it's in the sacrum. It's in the lowest point on the spine. It's the best possible spot you could pick. So most people with it in the sacrum would never even know they had spina bifida because it wouldn't affect anything unless you have the worst kind. You have the deepest hole.
You hit the lottery of misfortune, sir.
I have really good
bad luck
or that's really bad good luck.
Let's cheers to that one. That's fucking perfect.
I have a limp. I have a smaller leg that I can't really feel. I don't have proper innervation in. I have some stomach issues, things of that nature. All things that my parents felt like could get me bullied. Well, which did in some ways, but I was taught from as far back as I can remember, someone else's opinion of me is none of my fucking business. Like, it doesn't matter what other people think of you, it's what you think of you. And as long as you're confident in that, you will be fine. And I took that to heart, and it never bothered me. I was always smart enough when being bullied. Generally, bullies are not the smart kids.
No.
I could twist their words around and make a joke of it and make everybody laugh and move on with my life.
Yeah, and never fight a comedian. You lose every way.
Yeah, and And it wasn't even like I had to develop a thick skin or anything like that. It just came naturally to me. I'm like, oh, these people have their own problems, and they're trying to take them out on me. Because that's what I was told since before I started school. And that when someone has a problem with you like that, that it actually they have a problem with themselves.
Yeah.
And I was always able to flip it around and deal with it and move on. And then I see other people that were bullied just savagely.
Yeah.
Just absolutely savagely. And they're not okay at 40 years old.
Well, that's Justin Wren. That's what he does now. He went from literally going over and helping pygmies drill wells. He came right back here and started doing bullying in the schools, and I think the need is very much more equal than we think.
Really?
And that's why I still say we need a new bro code, man. Because some people, like you said, they don't have the intelligence to have that wit to get around that insult.
Yeah, they
don't. And I think we did. You could.
And they weren't given those tools. I was given a lot of tools. Yeah. I'm thankful to my parents that they set me down, knowing that I was going to face some hardship, and said, "Hey, you got to be ready for this, kid. The world doesn't care. world doesn't care what you eat. They don't care if you're happy. You've got to kind of step up and deal with it and say, okay, your opinion to me doesn't matter. Don't compare yourself to others." Because my mother in particular always made it very clear that being unique was a good thing.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for that because that instilled that in my heart. Mm-hmm. And I fully believe that the best people in the world are weirdos. And I've always embraced that since, 5 years old, I've embraced that because I knew that the unique people were the best. And I'm thankful for that. I never wanted to be like everyone else. And stop comparing yourselves to other people, guys. It's not a key to happiness. Focus on you. Focus on things that warm your heart and make your soul shine. And surround yourself with good meat sacks, like good people. That actually want to see you shine, that want to see you do good things, because that's the only way you're going to get anywhere.
Yeah. Focus on your friends, guys, the ones that, we're all skilled at something, and sometimes they don't have that. And I tell you what, one of the weird things about people that are bullied is they usually won't tell you. They won't tell you that happened. It's a very male thing. We don't talk about our struggles to one another.
Yeah, we typically don't, because we're told early on not to.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful for my parents, even though they both had a lot of parental guilt. I think all good parents do. The ones that think they're perfect at it are the ones that should never have been parents.
Sociopaths.
Yeah, they're sociopaths.
The narcissists float to the top.
Exactly. But they made it very clear to me, like... They put it in no uncertain terms that I didn't have to fit in, and I didn't have to play into these societal norms, and I was allowed to talk about my emotions.
And that is such a gem. That's such a gift that you could. I mean, you didn't have to be raised with it.
No,
you can be taught it now, and that's another thing that I really realized that I'm almost 40 years old.
Yeah,
is that you can learn skills that were kind of expected of you to have at a young age. You can still learn them now.
One of my favorite authors, Tom Robbins, said it's never too late to have a happy childhood.
That's a fact.
And I think that's a fact. I think you can always learn this stuff. What it really takes is self-awareness. Be aware of your own bullshit. And always never be in competition with anyone other than yourself. I'm not in competition with any other meat sack on this planet. I'm in competition with who I was yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to be a better dude than I was yesterday. And any way I can do that. And sometimes I fall short. We're all human. We're all flawed. But I am in competition with one person, and that's me.
Yep.
And I think if that's where we all focus, just keep ourselves focused on ourselves, where do we fall short? And how can we better society? How can we be a better friend, mother, son, child, father? How can we be just a better general human being out in the world? I think that's key. I think if that's where our focus, perfection doesn't exist. But if we aim for perfect and we miss, we're still pretty damn close.
Yeah.
I think that's important, to focus on yourself, always be self-aware, always be working on yourself, making yourself a better human. And that's all we can do. That's all we got. It's when we become okay with our own bullshit that we tend to pass things on.
That's getting towards the wrap up of this. I think that is that's the scariest story we tell, you know?
Yeah.
Is that, we tear ourselves down. We tear our friends down. We don't even know we're doing it or mean to do it.
It's completely subconscious.
It's been very, very conditioned into us. And then it makes us miserable. And sometimes at night you stay up and you think about that.
Yeah.
So, you know,
this is why I think mushrooms should be mandatory at least once a year.
There you go. More effective than any antidepressant. And antidepressants have worked in lobsters. Yeah. So they've worked since animals existed since, you know, we were exoskeletons crawling around. Yeah, serotonin and dopamine and these things, that's how they do their social hierarchy. So they're very important.
Yeah.
And when you're in a mood of being crushed, of being put down by the people around you, that's part of that. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Your brain's literally telling you, you're less happy.
Yeah.
So that's why we've got to change. I think that, you know, if we want to become better people as a group too, we need to do this. And we're out here telling you guys right now. So in wrap up, guys, I know that was a far pitch out into left field to come around, but this is kind of what Justin and I worry about.
This is what keeps us up at night.
It is. So, you know, the ghost story doesn't freak me out too much. If something were to walk across my room late at night, I'd probably be like, I'm going to try to rationalize that. But I just can't rationalize how we live
in
a lot of ways.
And I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that we'll figure it out, that we're always working towards it. And I always say, just look at the improvement we made. And there's always improvement to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So keep your self-awareness high and keep chugging forward and treating people with respect.
Yeah.
So I think that's about it. So
yeah, love yourself. Love those around you.
Yeah.
Throwaway Kids, come on to our Facebook group if you would, please. Let us know what you think about this. We're going to try to do a little more of the dives into what you all have requested. I think we're getting through them one by one, but we also have a talent to turn them into kind of what is on our mind.
Yeah, we kind of get out of
field. But that's what makes it that's
who
unique.
We are.
Yeah. So, everybody, thank you again for tuning in. This is a long episode. So grateful to be here. Ella will be back next time. I'm sure she'll have some funny stories for us all. So,
sweet. All right.
Bye. Later.